भगवते वासुदेवाय नमः भगवते वासुदेवाय नमः भगवते वासुदेवाय Srimad-Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 6, the Yadu Dynasty Retires to Prabhas. Text number 47. Word means Vata Vasanaha, dressed by the air, naked. Yea, those who are Rishaya, sages, Shramanaha, strict observers of spiritual practices, Urdhva Mantinaha, who have conserved their semen to the point that it has risen up to their heads. Brahma Akyam, known as Brahman. Dhamma, the impersonal spiritual abode. Te, they, Yanti, go. Shantaha, peaceful. Sannyasinaha, members of the renounced order of life. Amalaha, sinless. Vata vasana yarishaya samana urdhamantina hamakyam dhamate yanti shanta sanyasino mala Vata vasana yarishaya samana urdhvamantina dhammakyam dhamate yanti shanta sanyasino mala Vata vasana yarishaya samana urdhvamantina dhammakyam dhamate yanti shanta sanyasino mala Brahmakyam dhamate yanti shanta sanyasino mala vata vasana yarishaya Ladies,
Vata vasana
yarishaya
samana urdhvamantina
brahmakyam dhamate yanti
shanta
sanyasino mala Vata vasana yarishaya
samana
urdhvamantina
Brahmakyam namakriyanti.
Brahmakyam namakriyanti.
Translation. Naked sages who seriously endeavor in spiritual practice, who have raised their semen upward, who are peaceful and sinless members of the renounced order, attain the spiritual abode called Brahman. Purport. In chapter 12 of Bhagavad Gita, it is stated, Klesho dhikataraste sham avyakta satta chetasam. Those who are attached to the impersonal feature of the personality of Godhead must endure grueling penances in order to achieve impersonal liberation in the realm of Brahman. Also, it is stated in the Bhagavatam, Ahruya Krishchaina Param Padam Tata Patantyadho Nadritra Yushmad Angraya. Krishchaina, with great struggle and trouble, the yogis climb their way up into the impersonal effulgence called Brahma Jyoti. But again, they slip out of the Jyoti and fall back into the material world because they do not take shelter of the personality of Godhead. Envious fools object to the paternalism of the personality of Godhead. But those fools cannot take credit for the creation of their own body, brain, or energy, nor can they claim credit for the air, rain, vegetables, fruits, sun, moon, and so on. In other words, they are totally dependent on the mercy of God at every second. Yet they arrogantly state that they do not want to accept the shelter of the Lord because they are self-sufficient. In fact, some bewildered living entities even think that they themselves are God, although they cannot explain why God has to struggle and toil to achieve meager success in the yoga system. Therefore, Uddhava is pointing out that, unlike the impersonalists and meditators, the pure devotees very easily cross over the illusory energy because they are totally attached to the lotus feet of Krishna. Lord Krishna is always transcendental, and if one is firmly attached to the Lord's lotus feet, then he is also transcendental. The causeless mercy of Krishna is more valuable than millions and billions of years of one's own struggling and straining. One should try to get the Lord's mercy, and then everything will become very easy on the path of spiritual realization. In this age, one can achieve the mercy of Lord Krishna by constantly chanting his holy name as recommended in the Shastra. Hare Nama, Hare Nama, Hare Nama Eva Kevalam. Kalau nāsteva 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 gatiranyata brihannāradiya purāna. If one constantly chants Lord Krishna's holy names, avoiding offenses against the names, then surely one will achieve the same result as Uddhava. Uddhava was not interested in so-called Brahman realization, but rather he wanted to go on drinking the maddening nectar of the beautiful smiling of the Lord's moon-like face. Om Agyanatimirandhasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chukshirun Militamena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. This is the second of three verses dealing with this idea of crossing over the material world, being free from material existence. Actually, the last verse that is described is Tava Mayam Jayimahi. But your servants will indeed conquer your illusory energy. In this verse, we have the phrase Brahmakyam Dhamma Deyanti. We go to Brahma Dhamma. And then the next verse also mentions something offer Tadishyama. We will cross over Dushtaram Tama, insurmountable darkness. So we see how these different phrases we find in the Bhagavatam. Many places we hear about crossing over material existence or becoming free from birth and death. We have all these kind of phrases which are not very specific, actually. Even the word liberation, I've been thinking for a long time, We hear this word liberation a lot. What does it mean exactly? If you talk about becoming free from birth and death, so then what happens? You go somewhere. Now what Prabhupada tends to do is just say, go back home, back to Godhead, back to Krishna. But in this verse today, it could have been translated that way. Often when talks about going to Brahman, Prabhupada will just say, went back home, back to Godhead. I went to Vaikuntha, or went to Goloka Vrindavan. It just sort of fill in the blanks for you so you know exactly what's being stated. But here, of course, maybe we can see more clearly because of the context. It's talking about sannyasis whose aim is to go to some transcendental abode, transcendental place. But in other places, it's not so clear. And even in this verse today, I found it quite interesting. The Prabhupada quotes the last two lines of this verse from the Bhagavatam, 10th canto, very famous verse about falling from the Brahma Jyoti. So there, now this is how Prabhupada translates it in the 10th canto. This is in the second chapter, 10.2.32. So the demigods are praying to Lord Krishna within the womb. And it's this verse, yinye rivindakshani muttamaninas tvayastabhavada vishuddha buddhaya aruya krishna paramtadantata patankidho nadirta yushmarangraya. So there's some interesting things about this verse. First of all, when I read in this purport today and it talked about falling from the Brahma Jyoti, and I thought, it seems to be that this is the only place where we hear about this. As far as I know, this is the only verse that talks about leaving Brahman. So, because liberation, generally people think liberation is eternal. And that seems to be, well, that's the idea that you have in mind. Once you're liberated from material existence, then you're liberated. So this verse seems to be the only place where it talks about actually, maybe it's not eternal. You have to return from that place. So the thing is, Prabhupada actually translates this verse in different ways in different places. Now this is how he translates it in the 10th canto, 2nd chapter. First of all, he has this bracketed introduction to the verse. Someone may say that aside from devotees who always seek shelter at the Lord's lotus feet, there are those who are not devotees, but who have accepted different processes for attaining salvation. What happens to them? The answer to this question, Lord Brahma and the other demigods said, O lotus-eyed Lord, although non-devotees who accept severe austerities and penances to achieve the highest position may think themselves liberated, their intelligence is impure. They fall down from their position of imagined superiority because they have no regard for your lotus feet. So what I find interesting about this translation, there's no mention of Brahman. It says only they fall back from their position of imagined superiority. Now the Sanskrit is padam, right? The supreme, yes, padam. Now in word for word it says the highest position according to their imagination and speculation. So in this translation, you would think they didn't actually go to some transcendental place, the Brahman. They didn't merge into Brahman and then leave. That's not indicated in this translation. And also the phrase vimuktamanina says they think they're liberated. And also it says avishuddha buddhaya, which means their intelligence is still impure. So one would think that they're not going to Brahman if their intelligence is still impure, and they think that they're liberated. So I was thinking that, well, maybe this verse doesn't say that we fall from, you know, or you can go there and then come back. So then I looked around for other translations of this verse, and as was done in this purport, or Prabhupada's disciples, they say, they climb all the way up to the impersonal effulgence called Brahma Jyoti, but again, they slip out of the Jyoti. So Prabhupada does actually say this over and over again, actually, that you can go to Brahman. Now Prabhupada, what he does, the point that Prabhupada often makes is, why do they leave here? Because they haven't taken shelter at the lotus feet of Krishna. So even if you can, you become liberated, so-called liberated from material existence, what happens when you're liberated? Then you have no material body, mind, and intelligence. So you can't be active on that level. So when you go to Brahman, basically the idea is, as Prabhupada is presenting it and using this verse to make his point, then you're not really firmly situated. You look them on and you think you're liberated there in that place, but you're actually not, because you don't have shelter at the lotus feet of Krishna. And therefore, eventually, now Prabhupada over and over, he used this example. So there are so many big yogis, and they are in Brahman, supposedly, Aham Brahmasmi. They think I am Narayan, or I realize I am Brahman. But what happens, they leave that place and they open hospitals. They come to this world and they become active again on this material plane. So it shows that even though they've attained, or supposedly attained, Brahman realization, they're not happy, they're not satisfied there. So, even though you can see that this verse could be translated in a way that didn't necessarily make that point, Prabhupada used it repeatedly to make that point, that you can actually be a liberated, so-called liberated. But the other thing he would say, you look the mind and answer, you think you're liberated, you call it liberation, but it's not actually liberation. That's a point he would also make. And then he would quote it, of course, in the third canto, chapter 10, or excuse me, second canto, chapter 10 of Srimad Bhagavatam, is where the 10 subjects of the Srimad Bhagavatam are laid out by Shukadeva Goswami. Right? So Shukadeva is speaking then, I think. Yes. So, of those 10, the last one is, well, one of them, the mukti is mentioned. So liberation, you think liberation, but mukti, when it's defined a couple of verses later, the mukti, real liberation, actually these two words are used synonymously, mukti and moksha, you find either one used. So mukti is to be situated in your swarup, your actual, and of course in Prabhupada's presentation or our Vaishnava interpretation, that swarup is that you're Nitya Krishna Das, your eternal servant of Krishna. So that's real liberation. Until you get to that point, you're not actually liberated. So when we hear about liberation in the Bhagavatam, sometimes it's not clear exactly what's going on there. In fact, there are quite a few verses about Lord Brahma. I talk about Lord Brahma attaining liberation. For example, this is 611, the Bhagavatam. This is in the purport. At the time of dissolution, Lord Brahma, along with all the inhabitants of Brahmaloka, go directly to the spiritual world. This is confirmed in the Vedas. And there's a verse here. It says, Pravishyanti Param Padam. There's that phrase again. Because of their exalted position, those who are on Brahmaloka at the time of dissolution go directly back home, back to Godhead, along with Lord Brahma. Actually, there's a description of the slow way to go back. You have to go through the Shishumar Chakra and all these things. It's really quite a journey to get there. And I was reading in Brihad Bhagavatamrita, there's Gopakumara, he goes everywhere. It's really amazing, actually. He goes to Brahmaloka, then he goes through each of the regions, the coverings of the universe, sees the presiding deities of each one of those. And then he gets to Brahman, and then after Brahman comes Shiva's abode. It comes after Brahman, outside the coverings of the universe. Now there's a description of Shiva's abode. It's quoted in Bhagavad Sandarbha, which is so mind-bending, you can't figure out. I tried to picture it in my mind. What's going on here? There's a mandala and it expands in all directions, then above that is, and your brain just loses it somewhere along the way. Anyway, so we get to these higher stages where even in Vaikuntha, when Gopakumara is there, he says, I really can't describe it, I'll tell you something, but there's just no way. It's every moment, hundreds of millions of things are going on, unexplainable things. So I can tell you something, but we're not really going to get the picture. So these transcendental abodes. Someday Lord Brahma, it says that Lord Brahma, they go padam-padam, they go somewhere outside this world. So then I found this interesting here. This is Srimad Bhagavatam 3:32.9. So that means Kapila Dev is speaking to Devahuti. The yogis who become detached from the material world by practicing breathing exercises and control of the mind reach the planet of Brahma, which is far, far away. Somewhere I read recently where, of course it makes sense, but we think about these as higher and lower in a three-dimensional space, but not necessarily like that exactly. Even to go to Brahma, you know, it's out there somewhere. Actually, Sarvam Kalavidam Brahma. Everything is Brahma. Brahma is right here. You don't have to physically get on a train or a plane and go somewhere. So some of these descriptions there, you might say in a sense they're metaphorical because Brahma is everywhere. Anyway, so it says here, Brahma's planet is far, far away. That's depicted also in Dhruva Bhagavatamrita. After giving up their bodies, they enter into the body of Lord. So these are the yogis. After giving up their bodies, they enter into the body of Lord Brahma. And therefore, when Brahma is liberated and goes to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the Supreme Brahman, such yogis can also enter into the kingdom of God. So here it said, Purusham, Puranam, Brahma Pradhanam, Upayanti. So they go to the Supreme Person, who's the Supreme Brahman. Both of these were, Purusham was translated as unto the Personality of Godhead. And Brahma Pradhanam, the Supreme Brahman, Upayanti, they go. So this seems to be saying directly, they go to God. But, let's see, is this appropriate? I go into the verse, and it says, this is a little later. Yes, 3:32:12, a few verses later. When the interaction of the three modes of material nature begins, Brahma, who is the creator of this cosmic manifestation, and who is full of Vedic knowledge, and the great sages, who are the authors of the spiritual path and the yoga system, come back under the influence of the time factor. They are liberated by their non-fruited activities, and they attain the first incarnation of the Purusha. That means Mahavishnu. But at the time of creation, they come back in exactly the same forms and positions as they had previously. So it sounded like they were out of here, but now they're back here. They attain the Purusha, the Mahapurusha. So it sounds like some kind of merging. And then somehow the knows, I don't know, did this say whether it was the end of life or day or love? It tends to get confusing which of destructions and creations are being referred to at different times. So in any case, there are many different kinds of liberation. We hear one other thing in Bhagavad Bhagavatamrita. It talks about five different kinds of devotees that are in Vaikuntha. This comes in the beginning of the second part of Bhagavad Bhagavatamrita. What's her name? Uttara, Parikshit Maharaj's mother. After he heard the Bhagavatam from Shukadeva, she wanted to hear more. She wanted to hear synopsis, basically. So then he speaks the Bhagavad Bhagavatamrita. And she hears the first part, and she hears all the way up to about Goloka Vrindavan. So then she wants to understand, how is it, it has to be that those souls, they must get something better than other souls, even though the other souls may be perfect too. They have to get some kind of special mercy or something because they're so elevated, as I just understood from your narration. So it's described there that there are different kinds of devotees even in Vaikuntha. When we hear about the different, and I know about myself when I hear about the five different kinds of liberation, I tend to think, well, it seems like you'd get all of them if you were in Vaikuntha. You get the Lord's association, you get his opulences, you get to live in his same abode, and so with all of these things. But it's not necessarily true that you have direct association with him. That's one of them you might not necessarily have. In any case, these are five kinds of devotees that attend, that are present in Vaikuntha. First are the Jnana Bhaktas. They are actually devotees who are, they're pure devotees, but they still have some tinge of Jnana. They're in Vaikuntha, but they still, somehow, maybe it has to do with their absorption in the majesty of Lord Vishnu. This is what it says about him. It says, because Jnana Bhaktas harbor some of this is from Gopi Prabhupada's purport. which is taken from Baladev's, I think. Because Gyanabhutta's harbor some attachment to knowledge, the pure ecstasies of prana do not develop in their hearts, even while they live in Vaikuntha. So they have prana, but they're not, prana has different levels than we hear about. So they're in prana, but they're not getting the real ecstasy, they're not getting the highest taste, even though they're in Vaikuntha. The transcendental happiness they deserve is confined mostly to their mental activities. Now, I want to tie this back into the verse in purport, actually. We hear about in Burma. Because Ahambhava asked me, there's one place where Prabhupada says how it's really a kind of happiness. If you realize that, because imagine I'll never get sick again, I never have to die again, I don't have to be afraid of anything, I realize I'm eternal, and all those things. So I think, well, that seems to be a kind of happiness. But in Bhagavatamrita, there's a debate that goes on among the Shrutis, personified Vedas, and there it comes up that there's one verse that says it's very, very infinitesimal, practically, the happiness of Brahman, of realizing Aham Brahmasmi, compared to devotional service. Actually, they don't even compare, but it's practically infinitesimal. So it seems like it'd be pretty nice not to worry about all the things we worry about related to these bodies, but that's considered to be insignificant. So anyway, so the transcendental happiness they deserve, this is the Gyanabhuktas, is confined mostly to their mental activities. So their happiness is in their mind, in Vaikuntha. Shuddhabhuktas enjoy a greater happiness. So that's the next step. So we have the Gyanabhuktas and the Shuddhabhuktas. They enjoy a greater happiness which enlivens all their senses through hearing and chanting about the Lord, remembering Him, and so on. Then the next is, and prana bhaktas, that's the third one, feel even greater happiness through all their internal and external senses, because while seeing the Lord and serving Him in various ways, they constantly meditate on Him with love. Then the fourth is the prana pala bhaktas. Prana pala bhaktas cherish yet a higher standard of happiness, which they taste in their friendly dealings with the Lord. So they have direct association, interaction with Lord Vishnu and Vaikuntha, where not necessarily everybody else does. In talking freely with Him, and in their intense moods of separation and meeting, we hear about this in the Bhagavatamrita, that Lord Vishnu leaves Vaikuntha. Of course, you would think, well, He could leave and still be here at the same time. But that's not the way it's described. He has to go on some, for some reason, he's going out for the weekend or something, going to visit somebody, going on a little trip, and so he has all the anxiety because Lord Vishnu is leaving. So he leaves. So the devotees feel separation in Vaikuntha. Intense mood of separation and meeting. Of course, when he comes back, there's a big festival and we welcome. That transcendental happiness floods their entire being. And the Pranatara Bhaktas, that's the highest, know the ultimate extreme of happiness. They are immersed in the unending and most intense loving expectation of seeing the world, sharing pastimes with Him, and exchanging countless intimate dealings with Him. This is interesting. We usually don't think of this in Vaikuntha. We think, well, he's sitting there in his throne room and he's just looking at him or offering arati or something. But countless intimate dealings with Him, somehow or other. Every fiber of their existence is surcharged with such happiness, which always exceeds their greatest expectations. So this is Vaikuntha. And Goloka Vrindavan is millions unlimitedly times higher ecstasy. So it's indescribable, really. So then we see this point that they, the impersonalists, all they want to do is realize Aham Brahmasmi, and they work so hard for it. Prabhupada talk about the different austerities that they perform. You go to India still, you see, if you go to certain places, especially the foothills of the Himalayas, yogis doing things, and what do they get for it? What the Vaishnavas consider is meager. There's this debate that goes on between the Shrutis. At one point, some of the Upanishads are arguing about what it takes to get liberation, and the the Bhakti Shastras, they go away from the conversation. They don't even want to hear that discussion. Who cares about liberation? Don't bore my ears with this. And then I think Gopa Kumara, at once somebody brings him back and says, come on, get back into the discussion. So then they start glorifying pure devotional service. That's what they want to do. They only want to talk about Krishna and glorify pure devotional service. And it's in that context where they say, our liberation, why even bother? For those who work so hard for it. And of course we hear that in this age, liberation is just, there are many places actually to talk about, just by chanting the name or reading, there are many of the parashrutis that are given at the ends of different chapters, where it talks about, if you just read this, then you'll go back to Godhead. And Chaitanya Charitamrita, we're just hearing the other day, to the pastime, on Saturday, that says the parashruti, if you just hear this, pastime of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, then you will get the shelter of his lotus feet. So, as we heard here, Krishna's lotus feet are always in the transcendental world. So if you get that shelter, then you get that association and that mercy of service to the Supreme Lord. Alright, I'll stop here and read the translation again. Naked sages who seriously endeavor in spiritual practice, who have raised their semen upward, who are peaceful and sinless members of the renounced order, attain the spiritual abode called Brahman. Brahman. So now we're here, how it's so easy for the devotees to get that spiritual abode. Can you ask me, Prabhu?
I have a couple of questions. Is there any description of someone who has merged into the Brahma Jyoti falling down? I mean, we hear the description, that's what happens. Padantado Naduda Ushmad Angriya. But is there any particular specific person that we're aware of?
Not that I know of, no.
It seems like they kind of like, they're not persons anymore, it seems.
They're not perfect.
Well, they're not persons.
Not persons, yeah.
Yeah, you know, I mean, so...
Well, no, it raises lots of questions.
Yeah, I mean, how is it they're not happy?
You know? How they're not happy? What intelligence are they using to think about
the
these
point.
Things and so on? Because you're only, you're just Brahman, whatever that is. I heard recently that Brahman, we have two kinds of bodies. Either this, subtle body, but the subtle world's material bodies. But in Brahman, there's really no body, you might say. You have to get your spiritual body in the spiritual world. We have Prabhupada use this phrase. You achieve a spiritual body, you're given a spiritual body. So that spiritual body is made of Shuddha Sattva. So somehow, it seems like there's an in-between position where you don't really have that kind of identity, whether either material or spiritual. Well, it's latent, of course, but there's no perception of it. So yeah, how they're thinking, you think, well, there's no time there either, so how would you think, well, at some time they get tired of it? Because so much time has passed, and I've been here long enough, and now I feel like I need to do something, get restless. But how can you get restless when there's no time? You know, it reminds me of, they say a goldfish has a memory of 3 seconds. You know, so it's like, they don't get bored because they can't remember what happened a week ago or last month. It's like it's always new. Life is always new. New corner of the fishbowl.
The other one, I had two other questions. One is that there's this description of merging into the body of Lord Brahma. Is that the equivalent of merging into the Brahma Jyoti? Or...
it just says merge into his body. Now, what is Brahma's body? Sometimes we say it's pure intelligence. Although I don't know if it's necessarily always, put in that frame. I'm not sure exactly what Brahma's body is. Now, it's also said that this universe is like 7 cubits. It says usually our body is 7 cubits of our hand. So for Brahma, the universe is 7 cubits of his hand. So he's Brahma, actually, he's all over the universe somehow. His awareness is, his consciousness is somehow So Brahma's another one of those like Lord Shiva, who's really hard to understand exactly their position. So it just says it merged into his body. I don't know, we know in the beginning of the creation he had a body he didn't like, so he cast it off and took another one. So he's not, it's not exactly that for Brahma the body and the self are the same. There's some distinction between a soul and having that body, whatever that body is.
Some of these tyagis, they go to the Brahma Jyoti and some of them go to Lord Brahma's, merge with his body? Or is it the same destination?
Yeah, there are different ways you can go, apparently. You can also go step by step and bypass Brahma and go into Brahma. And then from there you can go to Vaikuntha also.
In the yoga ladder, in the Bhagavad Gita, Brahman realization is actually one of the rungs on the ladder.
Mm-hmm.
So then how does one get there and then keep going to bhakti?
That's something I've asked around about. I was thinking, Prabhupada, I remember there's an interview with a reporter. Someone asked Prabhupada something like, you know, how did you get these people to follow you? And Prabhupada said, I told him that if you chant Hare Krishna, you become self-realized. So I've always wondered, well, when does that happen? We have Ado, Shadata, Dusadu, there's no mention anywhere along that ladder of Aham Brahmasmi. So what it seems to be is that for devotees, it's not a concern. Our concern is prema, and somewhere along the way, it will happen. It seems to me, from what I've kind of inferred from different places, that it happens at very high levels, like bhava, possibly. That you have to get way up there before you actually realize your eternal. Because to really realize Aham Brahmasmi means, at least for a devotee, there's no like neutral, because we already have the knowledge of who we are. So there's no neutral state for a devotee where he just realizes he's Brahman, but he doesn't really know who that Brahman is or what it is. We always know what it is. So when it dawns, then we realize we're not this body, and we realize we're eternally serving Krishna simultaneously. What is that, like Narada Muni says? Like lightning and illumination occur simultaneously. So as soon as the lightning, the light is there, it's the same thing as the lightning, basically. So that's the same idea. So for us, we don't really exactly concern ourselves with that. It will happen.
Just one last question. I was surprised to hear about the first type of devotee in Vaikuntha, the Jnana Bhakta, because isn't Vaikuntha exclusively for those that are on the pure devotional platform?
Yeah, all I can say is the authority is Brihad Bhagavatamrita. Mappan Goswami has written it. And it does say that they have prema, but still, that prema somehow can accommodate, I think that's the way you might put it, that prema is so overpowering that it accommodates some jnana. So that jnana is still there somehow. I forget what it said here exactly, it was a description. But there's some kind of a jnana appreciation of Vaikuntha that still remains.
My question was about jnana bhakta. What exactly is a jnana bhakta?
Yeah, it seems to me that this is not the same thing as what we say jnana mishra bhakti,
mm-hmm.
or bhakti mishra jnana, which means more jnana and less bhakti. It seems to be something else.
I mean, is it jnana about bhakti?
Let me see what it says here. I don't think it gives much. It comes up in a verse. Now this is, if you want to look this up, this is Brihad Bhagavatamrita part 2, chapter 1, verse 20. Around that. This is the purport that I read. It's from there. And I think the verse comes just before that. But there it says here, let me read again what it says here. It says, because jnana bhaktas harbor some attachment to knowledge. Now, I think one way we could argue is that we could say, well, it's pure knowledge. It's not jaravidya. It's not the knowledge of in this world. It's transcendental knowledge. But still, it's knowledge, and we tend to think, well, we want to kick out our knowledge. Now, Prabhupada, of course, in jnana karma dhinavritam, he would talk about speculative knowledge as the knowledge that has to be kicked out from uttama bhakti. So,
This seems to be the implication is here that there's knowledge, it's pure transcendental knowledge. But in the higher stages, there's that even that goes away. So anyway, let me read this again. Because jnana bhaktas harbor some attachment to knowledge, the pure ecstasies of prana do not develop in their hearts. Now they have prana, but they're not getting all the ecstasies of it. Even while living by kunta. The transcendental happiness they derive is confined mostly to their mental activities. This is reminiscent actually of, I guess it's Tapaloka that the four Kumaras live on there, where they're always absorbed in meditation and they're getting a kind of ecstasy from that, some bliss from that, a real taste from that. In fact, so much of a taste they're preaching to Gopa Kumara that this is the real thing, this mental. So this is, apparently this is going on there. There's a kind of, almost like a meditation, it seems like, that the jnanis or jnana bhaktas are experiencing while they're living there. Yeah, so that's all I can say about that, I think. Another one of those inconceivable aspects of the spiritual world. We always have to realize, according to, I bring this up a lot, that in some sense what we read is it's kind of metaphorical. Not that it's real, not real, but we transfer everything and bring it down to into our three dimensions. So it's almost like the difference between seeing a shadow of something and then seeing, you know, a real person, a really live person speaking and walking and so on. So the shadow is kind of there, it's an indication. So we're getting an indication according to the way we receive the message. So there's really a sense, because what are we talking about? This is the realm of consciousness. Just think of what consciousness, what is consciousness? How can consciousness have dimension and thoughts and activities and all this? It's in a different dimension. We say that that's one of our arguments for the existence of God, actually the existence of spirits, that it has nothing to do with this material world and the interaction of the material elements. It's the realm of consciousness, and you can also say it's just the realm of existence. Existence itself, or being itself. So that's why it's so far beyond us to try to understand these things. That's why we come up with silly questions like, what happens if you eat a sweet ball that's alive, and what happens to that sweet ball? It shows that we have no idea what the place of what it really means to be in Vaikuntha. Anyway, something else?
Yeah, I actually have another question, but since you were talking about this, I was just going to interject. I heard in the 70s that one time Prabhupada was speaking, and the senior men that were right there next to his Vyasa-san, they were asking him about the Brahma Jyoti, and he said, one of them said something about what happens to them. Do they fall down? And Prabhupada said, yes, they all fall down. And one of the senior men there said, why is that, Srila Prabhupada? And Prabhupada said, because they get lonely.
Mm-hmm.
Because they get lonely. So, and then I think he went on to use that class as everybody needs relationship. You know, everybody needs one. My other question was, in another part of your class this morning, you were talking, and this is one of my questions these days, about how we know the material world, like we say this every day, it's our mantra, you know, the material world's a horrible place to be, it's just suffering, our material bodies are just suffering, all of our family members cause us trouble, there's so many miseries here, and we go on and on, and we believe it, and we've been doing it, and then all of a sudden, out of the blue, comes some doctor that said, well, you're terminal, you're going to die. Then why, if we're saying this all the time, why aren't we saying, wow, yeah, great, I'm going to get out of here. That's great. Oh, you mean I only have 6 months? I have to tolerate this place? Only more, 6 more months?
That's great.
But nobody is saying that. Nobody says that. I mean, I see advanced devotees leave their bodies, and it's really auspicious, and you see, like, they're very brave. They don't have the same level of fear, maybe, as karmis, but we're not really saying that. I don't know anybody
that I know that's gotten a disease
or a car accident or anything that's anxious to die. What does that mean about what, you know, any ideas?
Means we're working on it. Also, I think too, you know, for encouragement, in one sense, we're relying on Krishna ultimately. I know there's this place in the Harihara Kshetra in Navadvip. It's said there that if one dies there, then the Lord comes, Harihara, the deity, and chants the Maha Mantra in your ear as you live in this world. Make sure you go back to Godhead. So this is the, this is our cause for hope. Because we may also think we read, I mean, I know myself, I was just mentioning this to somebody the other day. And I was reading in purpose and it says, a devotee does dot, 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 this or that. And I was reading and think, well, that's not me, I don't do that. Some of the things it says that the devotee is supposed to do or how a devotee is supposed to be, which has to do with certain levels of realization. And I think, well, that's not me. But we're trying. We're trying, and we have Srila Prabhupada's help and Prabhupada's mercy and Lord Chaitanya's mercy. So we have to say that even though, you know, it may not be there, the realization, of course, we like that, as you say, well, the realization just hasn't come yet. It comes in degrees, step by step. We have to get closer to that. And I know myself, my motivations in Krishna consciousness, you know, I said fear isn't supposed to be, you know, there's a very high motivation for a devotee. We should be motivated by love. But I certainly think that fear is a motivator. And one of the fears I have is basically freaking out at the time of death, not feeling like I have any shelter. So you have to feel that now I chant Hare Krishna, I have to have some faith that Krishna will protect me. And even if I'm afraid, I don't quite know what's going to happen, it's very disorienting leaving this body because, you know, we feel like we are this body. We still notice it. When we get sick, we feel sick. We're not completely detached from it. So we have to have that faith that, well, Krishna's going to help me through this. What else can I do? What else can I do? I have to practice, make it second nature, and make it the course of that it becomes, not just parrot-like chanting either, but chanting from the heart. So that Krishna can do amazing things. There are certain stories of devotees leaving this world who they became peaceful by, you know, it was sort of like all the practice, it paid off at the end. So we can hope for that. All we can do is press on and expect the mercy. Remember, as a new devotee, that was a phrase devotees used to use a lot. We have to expect the mercy of Krishna. We have to rely on it. That's one of the principles of surrender. No, Krishna will help me. If I help myself, Krishna will help me. We have to nurture that conviction, so that we can face death. And at the beginning of the Bhagavatam, it said there, Shukadeva Goswami says, well, one should not be afraid of death, he said. So we're trying to progress to that state where we do actually welcome it and seeing it as Krishna's embrace. But yeah, it's not an easy thing, obviously.
When we hear a verse like today, all the details and quite complicated at time, you know, to understand and everything. Do you think, like Prabhupada was very clear, you know, do not change one word in my books and everything. Do you think it can be dangerous to start, you know, adapting different things to different circumstances, changing the
English? Well, I didn't see anything in today's verse. It was straight out of Prabhupada. So, I don't know, it seems to me, I mean, my reading and being an editor, I'm very scrutinizing in my reading, it's something I can't shut off. So, as far as I see, devotees are very closely following Srila Prabhupada. And also, of course, there's the principle that one speaks from one's own realization. So, as you understand it, then you repeat it. That's exactly what Prabhupada. That's why he started BTG, at least restarted in America. He wanted it to be a vehicle for devotees to express themselves. And he said that back to Godhead should be Shastra. He said nothing inconclusive should be in back to Godhead, he said. And in the future, people will refer to it as Shastra. So he expected his disciples to be writing Shastra. That means you don't deviate from the Siddhanta. You can express it in your own words, according to your own level of realization. You can use modern language. And as long as you don't change the philosophy, and I don't see anybody changing the philosophy in their books. I read books by Prabhupada's disciples, and They seem to maintain the fidelity to the teachings of Srila Prabhupada, so it's not something that has caused me any concern, I can say personally. Now, look at the biographical.
In a monologue, Srila Prabhupada was saying that liberation, the desire for liberation merging into the divine effulgence is like the desire to return to the womb.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. He said the child thinks, you know, mommy, I want to go back into you. That's just kind of insanity.
Regarding devotees not wanting to, or being afraid of death, I was arranging for the caretaking and the departure of one of my close friends, Raguna. Towards the end, he wasn't afraid. He wanted it to happen. He was anxious to go back to Krishna, and he was waiting for, just eagerly awaiting it. And I wrote an article that Gary Rai Swami published in his Life's Final Exam, Death and Dying from a Vedic Perspective. And in my correspondence with Maharaj, he says it's not just a guru, but this kind of consciousness is very common amongst devotees that had dedicated their lives to pushing the movement on. And that consciousness was observed by senior devotees that were present at the time of the departure. So there was very, very intense purification that Raguna went through for about 3.5 months to get to that point. But it was at the end, it was like amazing what consciousness he was in. And I don't know the details of others, but Gauri Rai Swami says that it's a very common occurrence. So, in other words, that level of consciousness is achieved, but the dying process kind of prompts it. You know, when one is actively dying and becomes aware of that, then Krishna gives special mercy. And one point that I always make in this regard, we make it in this article, is this one promise that Prabhupada gave. And this came out in a very clear way in a dialogue between Srila Prabhupada and Tamal Krishnamurti. This was in the early days of the Juha Project. And Tamal Krishnamurti, a very intense situation. Tamal Krishnamurti is exclaiming, Srila Prabhupada, how can I think of Krishna? My mind is simply filled with temple finances. So then Prabhupada responded by saying, yes, many lifetimes we've wasted on ourselves. If just in this one lifetime we can dedicate heart and soul to pushing on Lord Chaitanya's movement, and then at the end, even if we're not completely perfect, Lord Chaitanya will personally come and take us back to Godhead. So this seems to be the element. You know, we may not be, you know, prior to the active dying process or prior to, you know, the last few days of our lives, we may not be in that consciousness, but then Lord Chaitanya mercifully comes and gives us that consciousness and he takes us back. And so this is, it's not a one-time phenomenon. This is a very common occurrence amongst senior devotees that are leaving after years of dedication. So, and that's a promise that Prabhupada makes, so Krishna fulfills it. He's obligated.
Yeah, I'll see you back.